In the seemingly perfect world of the Dahlonjanger family, tragedy strikes without warning. When their adored father dies in a car accident, 14-year-old Christopher, 12-year-old Kathy, and 5-year-old twins Corey and Carrie find their idyllic suburban life shattered. Their beautiful mother, Corrine, suddenly penniless and desperate, reveals a shocking secret. She comes from immense wealth but was disinherited after marrying her half-uncle, the children's father. With nowhere else to turn, she takes them to Foxworth Hall, her childhood home, a sprawling Virginia mansion where dark family secrets lurk behind every corner. The children are introduced to their grandmother, a tall, severe woman dressed entirely in gray who views them as devil spawn. Her chilling pronouncement sets the stage for their nightmare. Until the day your grandfather dies, you are here, but you don't really exist. Forced into a single bedroom with access to only the attic, the children are hidden away while their mother attempts to regain her dying father's favor and secure his fortune. What was promised as days of confinement stretches into weeks, then months, then years, as their mother's visits grow increasingly infrequent and her promises increasingly hollow. The dusty attic serves as both prison and playground for the Dahlonjanger children. Here they create their own world, fashioning swings, using old schoolbooks for education, and crafting paper flowers that never wilt, unlike their gradually fading hopes. Through small windows, they watch seasons pass as their development warps under confinement. The twins barely grow in 3 years, their complexions turning waxy white. Christopher and Kathy experience puberty without guidance, developing in isolation with only each other for companionship. Their grandmother's religious rules forbidding self-examination and condemning wickedness only heighten their awareness of their changing bodies. The true horror emerges gradually. Their daily powder donuts are laced with arsenic. This slow poisoning, meant to eliminate the abominations without suspicion, claims Corey's life, though they're told he died of pneumonia. When Christopher tests a donut on Corey's pet mouse, they face a devastating truth. Their mother is complicit in their systematic destruction. As years pass, the children watch their mother transform from grieving widow to socialite. Her rare visits feature expensive clothes, jeweled hands, and elaborate excuses. Through a hidden cabinet, Kathy and Christopher observe a Christmas party where their mother flirts with Bart Winslow, their grandfather's attorney, whom she later marries. The grandmother's cruelty intensifies alongside the mother's neglect. After catching Christopher seeing Kathy naked, she cuts off Kathy's hair in religious rage and starves the children for a week. Later, she pours tar into Kathy's remaining hair, a calculated attack on female beauty, which she considers an instrument of sin. Their most devastating discovery comes when they learn their grandfather died nearly a year ago. Their mother inherited millions, but continues their imprisonment because of a codicil. She would forfeit her inheritance if proven to have children from either marriage. Their human worth has been measured against wealth and found wanting. The mansion that promised salvation becomes a monument to how easily greed corrupts even the most sacred bonds. The most controversial aspect of their imprisonment is Christopher and Kathy's evolving relationship. Under isolation and shared trauma, their sibling bond transforms into something more complex. Without normal peer interaction or appropriate outlets for developing sexuality, they increasingly turn toward each other. Their progression toward forbidden intimacy happens gradually, beginning with innocent physical comfort. Their only model for romantic love is their parents' relationship, itself technically incestuous. Ironically, the grandmother's obsessive warnings about wickedness plants the very ideas she fears. When Christopher discovers Kathy kissed their sleeping stepfather during a secret house exploration, jealousy erupts. "You're mine, Kathy, mine!" Despite initial resistance, they cross boundaries in a moment that leaves them feeling doomed for eternity. Afterward, weeping together, victims struggling with guilt. This relationship isn't romanticized, but stands as an indictment of the adults who imprisoned them, creating conditions that led to the very sin the grandmother was obsessed with preventing. Throughout imprisonment, creativity becomes the children's psychological lifeline. They transform their bleak surroundings through imagination and artistic expression. Kathy practices ballet using a bar Christopher builds, temporarily transcending confinement through dance. Music emerges as Corey's special gift. When instruments arrive, he reveals natural talent with heartbreaking compositions. I wish the night would end. I wish the day'd begin. I wish it would rain or snow. His music articulates their collective longing for freedom. Their paper garden represents their most ambitious project, transforming the dusty attic into a colorful paradise. This collaborative effort gives them purpose and simulates seasons they can no longer witness. These paper flowers symbolize their situation, beautiful but artificial, created to survive where real plants would perish. Their games reflect creative adaptation, too. They play Monopoly for hours, create stories in their fairy ring of chalk daisies, and lose themselves in books. Christopher studies medical texts while Kathy escapes into romantic novels, preserving fragments of childhood despite their unnatural confinement. Corey's death catalyzes their escape. After discovering the arsenic poisoning and learning their grandfather died nearly a year ago, they realize they must save themselves. They carefully plan, steal money from their mother and stepfather, and flee on November 10th with only necessities and Corey's instruments. The cold November air feels like sparkling wine after years of confinement. Carrie wobbles uncertainly, having developed in captivity. When she asks about meeting Corey, Kathy explains he's with their father in a beautiful garden waiting for them someday. As their train departs, they glimpse their grandmother's shadowy figure, a final image of the woman who failed to destroy them. They head toward Sarasota, Florida, where flowers bloom year-round, an apt destination for children who survived as paper flowers, now seeking real sunshine. Physical escape doesn't erase psychological imprisonment. Years later, Kathy writes their story with bitter tears and shame. Chris and Kathy's relationship remained tempestuous, and Carrie struggled with losing her twin. Their experiences permanently altering their understanding of family, trust, and self-worth. This gothic tale resonates across generations by exploring the inheritance of trauma, both genetic and psychological. The grandmother's religious fanaticism stemmed from her damaged past, while the mother valued her children only as she had been valued, for beauty and inheritance. The mansion itself becomes a character where wealth and power corrupted natural human bonds. Yet within this darkness shines human resilience. Despite enduring starvation, poisoning, religious terror, isolation, and betrayal, these children maintain their capacity to love, create, and hope. They refuse to become monsters, instead protecting each other and fighting for freedom. When examining our own family legacies, the patterns, secrets, and wounds passed through generations, we might recognize echoes of Foxworth Hall. True freedom requires not just physically leaving our confinement, but recognizing how it shaped us and choosing a different path. Perhaps the most powerful flowers aren't paper ones crafted in captivity, but real blossoms that grow once we break free from the poisonous soil of the past.